Happy Friday.
It is Chris Grota and
JJ Hendricks.
And we are your Friday host for Mornings for the Master. We're so glad that you have tuned in today. And we take this moment to ask you, if you would, to promote the show by using your social media accounts and invite people to come and join us here on TGRN.org, Mornings for the Master.
And if you don't utilize social media, we would encourage you to go to your front door or your back door, any open window, and
yell out the megaphone.
Use the megaphone. Yell out, hey! Hey! Listen to the GospelRadioNetwork.org right now. It's good!
Seriously, folks,
hey!
We need to get the word out about this program, and you know what? A nice letter to a friend simply would help. You know, you could take the cards. We have a little, hey, write us today. Call us. 903-575-8556 is a number you can call, 903-575-8556, to secure your business cards that will help you promote the Gospel Radio Network.
I was about to say, we have business cards?
We do have business cards.
Really?
JJ, where have you been?
Not with my business cards.
Okay, we'll hook you up today, JJ, so you can promote
Mornings
for the
Master. No, does it have our names on it?
Oh, no, we're not that important, JJ. We're just Fridays. We're just the Friday segment. We're just a piece of the big Mornings for the Master pie.
We're that little spricket of parsley next to the steak and taters. So
anyway, folks, you get the idea. We are team players, and we want to promote the program. We want you to do it, too. We're going to be talking about marriage from 1 Corinthians 7 today. Before we get into that, we have some announcements in our area. And, folks, just remember that everything kicks off at 7 o'clock tonight out at the Oak Grove Church of Christ. They're having their annual gospel singing. This is not something you want to miss. It is tonight from 7 to 9 p.m. Bring the family. Oak Grove Church of Christ is on the corner of Farm to Market Road 1402, known as Hart's Bluff Road to a lot of people around here in this area. And it's at the corner of County Road 3240, about 3 miles north of I-30 on the Hart's Bluff Road. So if you need some directions, if you get lost, or you just need some reassurance that you're on the right path, we don't want you to be lost. We want you to call us. We want you to contact us, and you can call JJ at...
No, I'm not giving my phone number over this.
Well, call us at the church, 903-572-1136, or the number that I just gave you just a moment ago. And I was just looking for David McCain's number on here, too. Seems like he would have put his on here. Oh, yes, for more information, call David McCain at 903-285-1756. And that is tonight from 7 to 9, the annual gospel singing. All male song leaders can bring two of their favorite songs.
How many showed up last year?
A lot. We had a lot of people, and there's going to be a lot of people tonight. In fact, John and Holly McCormack are coming over. I think maybe some others from Atlanta are coming over. I expect Andy is going to be there.
Andy, yeah.
So anyway, and then afterwards, there is the annual, it's the refreshments to follow at the home of David and Janice McCain. Friends, if gospel singing were not enough, the fellowship and the snacks
gospel
that we're going to have, the gospel refreshments afterwards at the home of David and Janice McCain is not something you want to miss. So, friends, tell your friends, let's pack the house out tonight at the annual Oak Grove Church of Christ gospel singing.
Tell your friends, tell your wife, tell your friends, tell your wife.
Okay, what's next?
Okay, in the Metroplex on July 21st, that being...
Just a couple of days from now.
Darren Schroeder will be speaking at the Godly Church of Christ. That is south of south of Cleburne. Been to Godly. I spoke out at Godly. Darren Schroeder will be speaking.
Seems like a good place.
And his lesson will be, I love having peace and security. And that is from their summer youth series, the North Texas Family Summer Series. And he'll be out there July 15th to 17th. So currently going on out at the Blanchard Church of Christ. You've got Bart Warren, who is holding a gospel meeting.
When's that starting?
That is starting July 15th.
Well, that's today.
It is today. Starting on a Friday. Okay. July 15th to 17th. Bart is the grandson of Thomas B. Warren. the great debater.
I've heard about this man and the work that they're doing.
And just doing some really good stuff. But they've the theme, can't talk today, is prepared to make a defense. And tonight is Who Needs Apologetics? Saturday, the existence of God and the reality of suffering. Sunday morning will be a Q&A session with Bart. The worship service, the inspiration of the Bible, and then the p.m. service, which is at 1 p.m., is the fact and significance of the resurrection. Where is Blanchard? Oh, it's Shreveport.
Yeah.
It's in Shreveport. Sean Embry's there, right?
Yeah, well, it's a community outside of Shreveport.
Okay. I like Sean Embry.
All right. And don't forget our Northeast Texas Summer Youth Series, Identifying with Jesus, Reclaiming Heaven's Vocabulary. The next meeting will be a guest, what we call the guest congregations. The next 2 weeks, actually, July 18th and July 25th, are both going to be out of state, just in some neighboring towns. Broken Bow, July 18th, they're going to talk about repentance. And July 25th, the Carriage Oaks Church of Christ in Bossier City. And if you, you know, I think it was an effort to try to reel them into our area. And we'll see how that goes. I think it'd be nice if we could all show up.
Last year, I mean, that's they were able to pull in a lot of people from their area, and we had a few show up. That was the place that the guy, I told him your name, and he spelled it weird. And I was like, well, as long as he remembers it, and he got up, is like, that'll be Chris Gruda.
Now, you are talking about Broken Bow, not Carriage Oaks.
Yeah, I'm talking about Broken Bow.
Okay, yeah. And then Carriage Oaks is on the 25th.
Okay.
So,
wait, is Broken Bow this?
Broken Bow's on the 18th.
Okay, so that's coming up next.
Right.
Okay. So, remember the guy got up, he's like, with Chris Gruda. I was like, yep. Did I pronounce that right, JJ? Uh-huh. You remember that? That was so funny. So funny. Okay, we got two last things.
I've actually got a couple more over here.
You do? Yeah. Okay, my bad.
But, you know, what is you have something before July 31st?
No, I don't.
Okay, that is the Camp Arklatex Singing School Week. If I have not heard, there's not been anything that I found. Of course, I have not gone to camparklatex.org and found out any information, but I know that space is limited. Don't let that deter you, because this is going to be a fantastic week of singing and fun. They'll be learning new songs as well as how to sing better. The classes will cover shaped notes, harmony,
ooh,
song leading, and much more. And they will also have swimming and lots of organized activities. Teachers for this session will be Andy Baker, one of our favorite area preachers.
Yes.
Christy Huntsman. And then I've heard of her doing Ladies' Days.
I didn't know she did
places.
Song stuff. She is put down on the calendar to do leadership session next year.
Yeah. So we've got her and Myron Bruce, Benjamin Bruce, and Bruce, you could call him.
The Bruce.
and listen, the cost is only $125.
What?
That is a deal that you cannot refuse.
Oh.
So register online at camparklatex.org for session 3.
What are the ages on that?
We ages 10 and up.
10 and up. Up?
And up.
So somebody like 60 could sign up and go to camp?
Not sure how that works, but I would basically say this is not just for kids.
Oh, okay.
So for more information, call Doyle Bruce. Call him at 817-798-6557. Again, that number is 817-798-6557.
Doyle Bruce. Maybe next week on the show we can call him and have him talk about it.
Yeah, let's get him to interview.
All right, and the same time in August 7th to 10th out at Meads Chapel Church of Christ in Nashville, Tennessee, they're going to have their 11th annual Restoration Revisited series with from the Middle Tennessee School of Preaching and Biblical Studies. They'll have Ben Flatt, David Sane, Robert Taylor. I wonder what version of the Bible Robert Taylor will be preaching from. You know? I don't know. I imagine it'll be King James. And Mike Hickson, as well as Bill Hunter, will be leading the singing. But if you don't want to drive all the way out to Nashville, Tennessee, from August 7th to 10th, I will be holding a gospel meeting in Benton, Arkansas, at the Highway Church of Christ. What?
Go ahead. Where is that? Where the? What are the? What's the location of that building?
It's off the highway.
Okay.
I-30.
Yeah, very good.
So
and that's the Meads Chapel.
Meads
Church
Chapel.
Of Christ.
Mine is in Benton, and going to be doing a series on twisted scripture.
Okay.
So I don't think there's a flyer for that yet.
Okay, and that's going to start August 7th.
Yeah.
Also August 7th through the 11th, God is Not Dead is the theme of the Oak Grove Gospel Meeting.
I didn't realize that the gospel meeting in Oak Grove was the same as my gospel meeting.
Okay.
It's a real shame they're going to lose so many people there at Oak Grove.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it is Mike Vestal. I don't think they'll have a problem. He'll be preaching.
Of course.
Is Christ, see, is the God that we serve is a shepherd, is a king, went to the cross, is not dead, and is a God that you should know, is a holy judge, and is the great father. So a good series of lessons. We look forward to having Mike in our area.
I like Mike. He's a neat guy.
All right. Is that all of it, or we have one more?
I think that's everything.
All right. After this, we'll be right back. We'll take a little break, and we'll get into Romans, 1 Corinthians chapter 7.
Now, y'all don't leave.
Listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each week.
And we're grateful to be back with you. It's automatically going. Just kidding, folks. We didn't mean for you to. We didn't want to cause you any angst right there with that program with some technical difficulties on our end. But anyway, just wanted to apologize for the technical difficulty. We'll get back.
Try to do something new. Play a song to cut between the announcements, and the machine takes over.
Okay, folks. Well, listen. We're in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 this morning, and. Really, this whole chapter is about marriage, isn't it?
Marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today.
I am quite certain that there's a large number of people listening to this radio program that would not understand that reference.
No. But the ones that do are going to think that JJ is hilarious.
Well, anyway, there are some general instructions and there's some specific individuals to be considered in this chapter. And the first part of this chapter is about general instructions. Talks about the advantages of marriage, the advantages of remaining single in some cases. There are some arguments that are posted and, of course, some answers that Paul gives. And, you know, and we learn from this particular text that God must govern any decisions concerning marriage and that pleasing God is the supreme objective. And that we are not our own, but we've been bought and paid for with a price by the blood of Jesus Christ. And even if we are married, Christ must occupy first place in our life. And so We're going to dig into this text this morning, but look, can you read the first part of 1 Corinthians 7:1? Look, notice this.
I like the first couple of words here. Now, concerning the matters about which you wrote.
In other words, this is like a question answer session.
Mm-hmm.
They actually wrote him about some issues, and so they're getting this answer back from the Apostle Paul.
And it makes many things make sense to us where it might seem like it's not conjoined or gel together. For us to understand that he is responding to questions and that they understood that he was responding to their questions, it helps us to keep his responses in their proper context. There are some people that will try to use verses from 1 Corinthians to try to show that there are loopholes out of what Jesus has taught.
Uh-huh.
And when we understand that they understood what Jesus taught, they needed clarification. And that is what Paul is giving them, is clarification that complements the master teacher's teaching.
Okay, so they understood what Jesus taught but needed clarification.
Exactly.
So they didn't or did understand?
Well, that's what they heard, and they needed clarification on it. You're right. I could have worded that a little bit better.
I was going to say that it sounds like they didn't understand.
They didn't understand. But yeah. Their questions were based off of Jesus' teachings.
Oh, okay. Well.
So they wanted clarification on what Jesus taught. Paul wasn't giving new revelation to them that would contradict Jesus, as some would like to say that he did. But we'll get into that, I'm sure.
Well, you know, Paul himself says so much in tribute to the marriage relationship, as you well know, and even in Ephesians chapter 5, the entire chapter just about is a husband and wife relationship concept. And so there will be in the text, the context, information given in explanation of the statement in verse 1. And I think this has to do with verse 26, verse 29, and verse 32. I think some of the more difficult, what we would consider to be the confusing passages of Paul here in this text. But he says, number one, he says it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. And he says, but because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. And so, you know, sexual sin is a danger, you know. And apparently they had asked if it had been better for a man not to have any sexual relations at all. And so... You know, and notice that ours is in the quote. It is good for a man not to have sexual relationship with a woman. He, you know, I seem to think that this is something that they wrote to Paul.
Right.
And the translators in the ESV have put it in quotations,
mm-hmm,
to make us understand that it was their question, it was their words. And so Paul basically says, he says, you know, that because of sexual or because of temptation, you know, because of sexual sin is such a danger, each man should enjoy his own wife and each woman should enjoy her own husband. The husband should give his wife what she deserves as his wife, and the wife should give her husband what he deserves as her husband. In the ESV, it talks about conjugal rights. And so this is a big problem. I know this is not spelled out as far as the marriage problems here. He's not getting into people's marriage problems, but this can certainly be a problem in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that even in today, we have in members of the church struggle with this as well. You know, how do I always give myself? This is not what I need. It's about what my wife needs. It's not about what my, you know, it's not about my wife either. It's about me, you know. And so you can see the mutual, the mutual understanding that we both have sexual needs. And in this verse here, he says, for the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. And so notice how one is for the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's interesting that Paul would say this, and I don't know what people's thoughts are always about this. I've had some different reactions to it in Bible studies and marriage counseling sessions. They just kind of look at each other and look at me like, well, we've been doing this all wrong.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, but I like the way Paul puts it. You know, the husband should give his wife what she deserves. And then in verse 4, the wife does not have power over her own body. Her husband has the power over her body, and the husband does not have power over his own body. His wife has the power over his body. And that is just, you know, we don't understand it so much from the other side. When we look at it, it's a two-sided issue, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So in verse number 5, what does he say?
In verse number 5, do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control.
Well, so there you go. I mean, you know, the whole point of what Paul is saying is, don't refuse to give your bodies to each other. Don't do that. But you might both agree to stay away from sex for a while so that you can give your time to prayer. I mean, maybe, you know, it was a common practice that that prayer and fasting was a period of abstinence from the desires of the flesh. You and I don't do this. I mean, this is we in the Church of Christ, Churches of Christ, the culture that we have, we typically reject the notion of fasting. Now, there's obviously some that do it. I'm not trying to make a generality here. I really am trying to be understanding of the specifics cases, because there are people in the church who are trying to restore this New Testament practice and do it without, you know, binding.
Yeah, but one thing, I knew of some preachers that decided to fast for a week, and when they got done with their fast, they came to the conclusion that it didn't matter if you used instrumental music or not. And it was like, I didn't understand it then, and it's like, I don't understand it now, because the fasting isn't to get answers. The fasting was to refocus on God.
Right.
And fasting isn't going to cause you to come to a conclusion
that's not warranted by Scripture.
That is not, yeah. I mean, if that were the case, we could all fast for a week and then do whatever we want and say, well, we fasted about it.
It's interesting you brought that up, because, you know, people might associate fasting with jumping off the deep end doctrinally. I've never thought of it that way. I've just thought of it in the sense of, you know, everything that you see it in grief, you see it in the church in Acts when they're making a big decision about elders, you know, who's going to be installed as elders, or maybe before a mission trip, sending some guys off on a trip. And you see it in different times and places. And Jesus never does say that you should. He just says that when you fast,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is the way you should do it. And you're not supposed to be blowing a trumpet about, you know, your spiritual action there. So I know that it was a part of New Testament theology, that fasting was a part of, you know, of the Christian lifestyle. And Paul says that there's an exception here, that there's a time for abstaining from sex, even as a husband and wife, but it's for the purpose of prayer. You know, it's for the purpose of focusing on God.
Yeah, to get centered again.
Yeah.
But verse 6, now as a concession, not a command, I say this, I wish that all were as myself am, but each one has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. So did he consider it a gift that he was able to remain single and do the work of the Lord?
Well, you know, it's a good question. And I think that is the idea. The idea I think he says now as a concession. The King James, of course, says by permission. The idea is that of indulgence, concession. This is set against that which would be commanded, of course. And so we are persuaded in view of the beginning of the next verse that Paul refers to more than just the matters of verse number 5. It says, you know, here in verse number 7, I wish that all were as I myself am. And it has to be that he's talking about his singleness here.
Context would dictate.
Yeah, context would dictate.
And that's one thing. We're going to go over some verses that some have made controversial, But it's very clear when we take what he is saying in context, this is not difficult.
Well, you know, and he's not saying that singleness is for everybody. But each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. And the gift, you know, each man has his gift. And to one man, it may be that he is able to be content, but another may not be content with singleness. And so some men may willingly be eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake, as Matthew 19:12 points out, and others may not be content to do that.
You and I know two different preachers, both of which are single. One of them is A-okay with it and has a robust life doing all kinds of great stuff. And the other one is flat out miserable because of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's...
You know, and so there's the two. That's a perfect example. You know, that some may be content with it, some may not be content with it. But he goes on to say, he says, to the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is not, that it is good for them to remain single as I am. To the unmarried and the widows, he says, it's good. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. Now, and this is the second time that I've seen in the text, maybe the third time that I've seen that we lack self-control. And so if you looked in verse number 5, one of the reasons why the husbands and wives need to come back together in their sexual union is that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. He says that, you know, that you know, in a general way, I guess he's saying that the unmarried could have self-control, but typically most people, especially the married people, you know, they're not going to have that self-control. You know, they've got to they've got to appreciate their weakness to the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to appreciate their needs.
We need to know our limitations. I mean, it's one of those, if I know that I could falter being around alcohol, what should I never be around?
Alcohol.
And that is, I feel that this is similar with so many other temptations, but this is something that, I mean, there's no justification for alcohol.
Yeah.
Where there is an area that is justified for sex, and that's within the confines of marriage.
Well, so let's just talk about this for a second. I mean, maybe there's some people listening out here that are young married people. Let me give you a piece of advice. It is absolutely commonplace for a couple that has a falling out. Maybe they have an argument or something. Maybe there's something that the husband is doing that's annoying you. Maybe there's something the wife is doing that's annoying you. And it's probably, more often than not, it's probably the wife that withholds the sexual activity than the man does. It's just most all the time the women that are holding back. Let me tell you what that does. It's going to sexually frustrate your husband. Mm-hmm. That's what that's going to do. And I'm going to tell you, it does go both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Men can lose interest in their women and not want to have anything to do with them and refuse that. And they can do it in spite. They can do it out of spite. And when that does, when that happens, when you throw yourself into that type of animosity and that type of negativity in that relationship, you will seek opportunity elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Paul is saying. He's saying that Satan's going to tempt you in that, and even if there is not a problem in the marriage already, even if it's just for the purpose of depriving one another for a limited time so they can devote themselves to prayer, he says, but come together again so that Satan may not tempt you in your lack of self-control. Even with all your spiritual purposes and trying to devote yourself to prayer, he says, you know, you can still be tempted, you know. Hey, think about it. I'm going to be spiritual. We better abstain for a while. I never even had this conversation with my wife, but imagine this first century couple having a conversation about that and saying, you know what, maybe we ought to abstain from sexual relations for a little while. We can just devote ourselves to prayer. Okay. Well, that's nice, but don't forget that you have a weakness to the flesh.
Mm-hmm. That's why I only said for a little time. Don't say, let's have a year of prayer and fasting. And
yeah, well, yeah, that's nuts. But I think Paul realizes the reality of anatomy. And mm-hmm. And so in verse number 6, I say this only to give you permission to be separated for a time. It is not a rule. You know, he's saying, I wish that everybody could be like me. But God has given each person a different ability. He makes some to live one way, and he makes others to live another way. And what I think is interesting is, you know, let's just talk about the two preachers we know for a second, the one that's content with being single and the one that's not. You know, I have never thought of describing that lifestyle as an ability. You know, I think of abilities as being talents. Mm-hmm. But here, this ability is having to do with the ability to be content with the choice.
Yeah, and the one that has that ability, I mean, he's living a robust and exciting life. I mean, he's doing some really neat stuff. I actually got to spend some time with him last night, and it's one of those I maybe have heard him talk about a wife once or twice, and that's it. And it wasn't in a longing type way. It was in long lines of some of us have chosen not to. So some of us have chosen not to pursue a wife, to focus on what we're doing, focus on our own interests and that kind of thing. Where the other guy, I mean, it can to a point hinder his ministry because he is wallowing in that wanting to have a wife. And
yeah. I mean, it's a distraction.
Yeah, it's a distraction for him, where the other one, it's not.
Okay. So, I've never seen anybody really put it quite like verse number 7, ability. Yeah. Everybody has a different ability. He's made some to live one way, some to live another way.
There's no telling how many times I've read over this, and I've never put that together. That's a really good thought.
It's interesting, mm-hmm. because I wouldn't have used the word ability. You know, you'd think about talents or something, and you'd think, what's Paul talking about? But anyway, so he is talking about your state of mind and your ability to cope and to concentrate and to do the good work of God. And so in verse number 8, he says, now for those that are not married and for the widows, I'm telling you, it is good for you to stay single like me. There was something good about that. There has to be some reasoning behind it. But again, he brings up, he says, now for those who are not married and for widows, I say this, it's good for you to be single like me. But if you cannot control your body, if you cannot do this, then you should marry. The only provision, he says, the only thing better than being single for the cause of Christ is being married, because you cannot risk your soul salvation on your sexual desire. It is better to marry than to burn with sexual desire. And I think about this. Marriage is a gift from God. It's not good that man should be alone. It's not good. I mean, in the rare circumstances.
But we have to also remember that it is a privilege. It's not a right. And some people mess up the privilege. And
right.
They have to learn to have that ability that Paul had. It is something if they have messed it up,
yeah.
They're going to have to learn that, because it is they who pooped in their nest. I mean, they're the ones that are going to... that have to deal with that did something that was wrong. But we're going to get to that in a minute.
Well, in fact, in verse number 10, he says, now I have a command for those who are married. Okay? To the married I give this charge, not I, but the Lord. So he's saying, I gave you my opinion a minute ago, but now I'm not giving you my opinion. I'm giving you a thus saith the Lord.
Yeah.
And he is saying...
Because verse 6, he said, this is a concession. This is my opinion. Then he goes, now this answers your question, and this is from God. This isn't my opinion about it. Now let's get into the answering your questions.
A wife should not leave her husband. The wife should not separate from her husband. Now, I was speaking to a woman this last week, and she spoke of having a desire to move in with her mother. Not that she wants to divorce her husband. She just didn't want to live with him. I mean, she'd rather live with her mother than live with her husband. And not that she has a problem. I mean, she does obviously have some problems with her husband, but not to the point of divorce. It's just, she would choose to rather be with her mother. That's wrong.
Yeah, because
that's not right.
We already have talked about the conjugal rights. Is how are you going to give your husband what he deserves in marriage? And get what you deserve in marriage if you're not living under the same roof as him.
Well, so Paul says in no uncertain terms, and it's the words of the Lord, the wife should not separate from her husband.
But we need to use common sense. If somebody is abusive,
yeah,
if they are putting you in danger, then yes, separate. But what this is saying here is don't just say, I'm not getting along. It just isn't working out, so I'm gonna move in with mama.
That's true, but if you look at verse number 11, it provides for the extenuating circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
But if a wife does leave, mm-hmm. what should she do?
Remain unmarried.
She should remain single, or what?
Be reconciled to her husband.
Get back with her husband.
And then it goes likewise for the husband.
And a husband should not divorce his wife.
So we have a principle that's laid out. And some like to use this to try to skirt what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 9. But right here, we see a principle that is laid out that continues on is remain, if you do separate, remain unmarried.
Now, let me ask you a question. Is the separate in the first part of verse 10 the same thing as the divorce in the last part of verse 10?
I don't think so.
So tell me. Let's talk about this. Let's get into it just a little bit because it says that the wife should not separate from her husband. If she does, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
And it says, and the husband should not divorce his wife.
Okay,
what is that? Is that reactionary? Like, I shouldn't divorce my wife because she separated from me, or is it saying that basically the same thing in different words?
I don't know. What does Matthew Henry say?
I don't have him open.
I just
wondered, about that because, I think that there's, I'm thinking of a case where a woman actually went through the divorce process and has remained unmarried. Now, can she be reconciled to her husband after she's been divorced?
Oh yeah.
There's some people that don't believe that, JJ. There's some people that believe that once you make the divorce papers, you're locked in. You cannot be. And it goes like this, that. You cannot, unless the divorce was for the cause of fornication, you cannot be remarried. And so not even to your own husband can you be remarried, is what some people think.
Well, they need to read this then.
So is separation different from divorce? I'll tell you what Adam Clark said here.
Yeah, what's Adam Clark say?
He says, and let not the husband put away his wife, let's see. Let her remain unmarried. He says she departs at her own peril. But she must not marry another. She must either continue unmarried, or be reconciled to her husband. Now, because of the use of the word unmarried, it doesn't just say continue to be separated.
Yeah.
It says unmarried, so it could imply a divorce because she is no longer married.
Context.
No longer married.
Yeah.
And then it says, and let not the husband put away his wife. Divorce, don't let the husband do this.
See, I like,
wives don't do this, husbands don't do this.
Yeah. I like how Paul lays this out, because what we find is he answers the question that could be based to Christians. Then what we're about to look at is to the Christian who is married to an unbeliever, mm-hmm. and then the about how the Christian should respond to the unbeliever, and then I guess it's both of them, but in different avenues. Like, look at verse 12. To the rest I say, I, not the Lord, again, what he reiterates, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, he shouldn't divorce her. Because I imagine that the question that was given is, I've become a Christian. My wife is as Corinthian as they get, because Corinth was awful. So for my soul's sake, I think I'm just going to go ahead and divorce her. And I'm going to go ahead and leave so that I can be a better Christian. And Paul's like, Scooter, that's not what Jesus said in Matthew 19:9. He's saying, this is what Jesus said. Now, I reiterate to you that you should not divorce her. If any man has a husband who's an unbeliever and he consents to live with her, she should not divorce him. For the unbelieving husband is made holy because of his wife, and the unbelieving wife is made holy because of her husband.
But now, is this why this is good advice? This is just coming from Paul. It's not the Lord.
Huh?
It says, I, not the Lord.
Oh.
So, is this just the high road? Paul says, here, you can take the high road on this.
Yeah.
I'm saying this, not the Lord.
Yeah, because, I mean, Jesus already said it in Matthew 19:9. That makes sense that he would say, basically what he's saying, if we're going to use 2016 American language, is don't leave your unbelieving spouse just because you're a Christian now, because your influence could cause her to be a Christian. So don't leave just because she's unbelieving, because like 10 minutes ago, you were unbelieving too.
Okay. So makes a lot of sense, Jage. But, you know, he goes on to say, and I'm jumping back to verse number 11, because it says, "And let not the husband put away the wife." I think it's interesting that Adam Clark recognized that divorce cannot be allowed. He says divorces cannot be allowed, but in the case of fornication. And I think what he means is scriptural divorces. And so an act of this kind dissolves the marriage vow, but nothing else can. It is a fact among the Jews, the wife had just as much right to put away her husband as the husband had to put away his wife. Mm-hmm. As divorces were granted, it was the right that each should have an equal power, for this served as a mutual check. So Paul is saying, don't do that. And if you do, remain unmarried.
Remain unmarried. Context. Everything is going to go back, because somebody will see this and say, well, if they did put away their spouse, and then could they get remarried because they're Christians and the other person was not? Remain unmarried.
Yeah.
And that goes on to our next verse 15. But if the unbelieving partner separates, let it be so. In such case, the brother or sister is not enslaved. Remain unmarried. And the unslaved there is not as people often reference it to be. The enslaved is being enslaved to marriage instead of enslaved to God, because we're to be enslaved to God. If an unbelieving spouse says, I'm going to divorce you if you don't quit church. And I imagine the conflict that the Corinthians would have was, I know that divorce is wrong, I guess I need to go with my wife. And so they could easily fall away because of that. And basically that is what Paul is addressing here, is saying you are not enslaved. Such cases, the brother or sister is not enslaved. God has called us, or called you, to peace. So basically it's saying marriage should be peaceful. But nowhere in that verse do we have any inclination that if an unbeliever leaves, that you can get remarried. Because what was previously said in verse 11? Remain unmarried. What is the implication on the following part? Don't believe your unbelieving spouse.
Well,
remain unmarried.
Well, here's another way of putting it. If the husband or the wife who is not a believer decides to leave, let them leave. When this happens, the brother or sister in Christ is free.
Yeah, free from the responsibilities of that marriage, but not free to get remarried.
Now, is this still in the context of verse number 12?
Oh, yeah.
Where he says, to the rest I say, I, not the Lord. Is he going back into his own opinion here?
I think, remember, he is answering their questions pertaining to what I assume is Jesus' teaching in Matthew 19:9.
I think that they're asking these questions about Jesus' teaching in light of their being married to a non-Christian context.
So some people will try to say, well, you know, that Matthew 19:9, it doesn't apply to us. Well, that's silly, because Jesus said in John 14:15, if you love me, keep my commandments. Not, you know, and that's boggled my mind. People say we're only bound after Acts chapter 2, and it's like, hold on. So we are Christians, but we're not bound to Jesus' teachings. That's ridiculous. Yeah. Sorry, I'm using a little active about that, but we always see here, remain unmarried. So it would be overly redundant for Paul to have to, after every one of these circumstances, say remain unmarried, because Matthew 19:9 had already said that the only reason for divorce was for sexual immorality.
Right.
So Paul isn't going to flip the switch right here in verse 15 and contradict clearly what Jesus taught. Because you look at Matthew chapter 19, the Pharisees are trying to trap Jesus. And Jesus references Genesis, he references the old law, and what we find is that marriage has been and always will be a universal law that has gone through every dispensation. And Christian or non-Christian, marriage counts. So people that will say, well, you know, I was divorced before I became a Christian, that would be great, except for the fact that marriage, you were joined in the sight of God, whether you were a Christian or not. In Matthew 19:9, Jesus is clear as the only reason, right, wrong, or indifferent, for divorce is for fornication.
Now, you know in verses 12 through 16, Paul is not encouraging divorce.
Absolutely not. And he's definitely not encouraging remarriage. That's not even addressed at all.
And so, you know, the purpose of staying together in verse number 16 is, how do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife? The whole point of staying together and working it out would be to save the soul of the other person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know why we tell people not to marry Christians. We tell Christians, don't marry non-Christians. But now, you know, in the sense that they're coming, you know, they're already married and they're coming out of this lifestyle and into Christianity. One of them's a Christian, one of them's not. It is not part of their repentance to dissolve their marriage.
Yep.
In fact, it could have been considered that an unequal yoke or an evil companionship could corrupt good morals, and that they should just put away the pagan wives from among them. And maybe that little teaching crept over. Maybe they thought that that was the right thing to do. And so Paul is saying that you should stay together. And so what was kind of causing me some concern is I get what he's saying, but it's just, why does he put the parenthetical in here, to the rest I say, I, not the Lord?
I don't know.
So, you know, in the previous context where he said, I, not the Lord, we said that's his opinion. But now when we get over here to I, not the Lord, we say, no, this is not opinion, this is thus saith the Lord.
Well, we could even say that this is opinion, because it still doesn't contradict Jesus' teachings. So he's not necessarily giving them an outright command, but he is saying this is good for you to do, because he is not contradicting what the teacher already taught.
Yeah.
He is explaining it further. They had questions about it. He answers those questions.
Okay. So the issue is not about marriage, divorce, and scriptural remarriage. This has to do with, am I allowed to stay together,
yes,
with my unbelieving wife?
And what happens if they leave? And nowhere, no matter what hermeneutical gymnastics you do, nowhere can you read into this passage that remarriage is even there at all.
Okay, now again, let's go back and look at verse 15, because a lot of people read this as if the unbeliever partner separates, let it be so. In such cases, the brother or sister is not enslaved. They look at that and they automatically think, hey, I'm a Christian now, I can put away my unbelieving wife. That's not what this is saying.
No, no.
This is talking about the infidelity to the marriage of the unbelieving partner. When the unbelieving partner is an infidel to the marriage, let them go. Don't try to keep that together.
Mm-hmm.
You're not under bondage to try to work that marriage out. Let them go. Yeah. What are they going to do when they leave?
They're probably going to go and fornicate.
And they'll have a scriptural reason to be remarried.
Then they'll have that scriptural reason.
But
yeah.
JJ, this is not about the believer,
right,
putting away the spouse because, right, he's a non-Christian.
Right.
This is about the Christian spouse who has an unbelieving wife or husband who decides to leave the marriage. And when he leaves the marriage, nine times out of ten, what are they going to do? They're not just going to leave to be celibate, JJ.
Yeah,
they're going to leave to fornicate.
Yeah, they're not going to go live in a cave.
They're leaving to fornicate. And
yeah,
so that's why they're free. That's why they're not enslaved to that marriage. And by the way, JJ, this has all the more to reinforce Matthew 19:9, that the innocent party can be remarried.
Absolutely.
So that's what this says. This is not – I could clear this up just in a real simple statement, that verse number 15 – is not about what the believer has the right to do to put away their spouse. This is about the rights that the believer has when the unbeliever is unfaithful to the marriage.
Right.
And so, but a lot of people, I see, way you're arguing it, and the way that a lot of people are arguing it is they think, oh, well, I'm a Christian, I can put away my unchristian spouse and,
right,
be remarried to a Christian.
Yeah, that's not.
That's
not
what this is talking about.
And see, that's right here. I had, when I preached in Oklahoma, I had an older couple that did not like the truth on marriage, divorce, remarriage. And they came to my office, and she said she had been married as a very young adult, and her husband just abandoned her. And that was it. She never heard from him again. She saw him once in the next 50 years, and he didn't even recognize her, is what she said. And so she pulls out a Bible commentary that says Matthew 19:9 could include abandonment. And I said, just because it's written in a book doesn't mean it's correct. I said, because I've got a lot of books that have false doctrine in them. Nowhere do we see porneia, that Greek word, mean abandonment. Mm-hmm. And the assumption could be made that he went and fornicated, but that wasn't the reason for the divorce. Yeah. And so it was. Well, I told her, how do you know that he did? What if he decided, you know what, I'm asexual, I have no drive at all, and she's crazier than a rat in a tin outhouse, which can also verify. So, I mean, what if he just was like, I'm done? I said, you don't, this right here, this unbelieving spouse doesn't give you the right to remarry. It means you don't have to, you're not enslaved to that marriage to sacrifice your Christianity to follow an unbeliever. Mm-hmm. I can see both sides of the coin with this.
Yeah,
but neither of them involve remarriage.
Yeah. No, that's not the kind of, but in the sense that somebody was to go and fornicate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, for those who are really concerned about this issue, did you know that you can counterfile a divorce?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if the initial divorce is not for the cause of fornication and it comes up later, you know, you can go back and counterfile and make it scriptural.
Yep.
Because I know that's what the Christian's going to think.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I've got a friend that's happened to. His wife just went bonkers and wanted a divorce and forced his hand. And now I assume she's having relations with another man because what's being posted on Facebook. And I've told him, you know, you can counterclaim.
Okay, so if we are going to finish this chapter, we've got to speed ahead just a little bit. Paul says, live as you're called. Only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned him and to which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. Was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? Now, we're going to get into the circumcision issue. Let him not seek to remove the marks of circumcision. It's like, don't try to have your circumcision surgically replaced. I guess that's what they were thinking.
That's awful.
Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision. For neither circumcision counts for anything nor uncircumcision, but keeping the commandments of God. That's where real purity is. Each one should remain in the condition in which he was called. You were a slave when you were called? Do not be concerned about it. But if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity. It says, for he who was called in the Lord is a slave, is a freedman of the Lord. Likewise, he who was free when called is a slave of Christ. You were bought with a price. Do not become slaves of men. So, brothers, in whatever condition each was called, let him remain with God. And so, you know, that's an interesting concept. He only brings up slavery and circumcision. In other words, he's like, don't change so much. Don't try to worry about your outward conditions. You worry about changing your heart. You belong to God.
Right.
So, and then he talks to the unmarried and the widowed. He says, now concerning the betrothed, I have no, this is not engaged. Betrothed can mean married, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, concerning the betrothed, I have no commandment from the Lord, but I give my judgment. Again, here's Paul's judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. And so he says, I think that in my view of the present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned, and if a betrothed woman marries, she has not sinned. Yet those who marry will have worldly troubles, and I would spare you of that. So he's saying, you know, it'd be good just to not marry for these purposes. He says, this is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. From now on, let those who have wives live as though they had none, and those who mourn as though they were not mourning, and those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing, and those who buy as though they had no goods, and those who deal with the world as though they had no dealings with it. For the present form of this world is passing away. And that's an interesting concept. You know, there were times, they were difficult times, and they were changing. You know, we're living in difficult times right now.
Yeah.
Times are changing. He says, I really want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things, and that is how to please his wife. And his interests are divided. And the unmarried or the betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord and how to be holy in body and spirit. But the married woman is anxious about worldly things, that is how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit and not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. And that's what Paul was saying.
Yeah. And we look to the next part and we see that we need to have our hearts in the right place. And, you know, we look down in verse 39. This is a point I wanted to make. A wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives. The only way for a marriage to dissolve is either through fornication or through death. And Paul sums this up beautifully. And we have run out of time. So glad to have you listen today. Hope this was...
Well, I think it's, you know, all of it's about faithfulness to God ultimately and faithfulness to whatever condition you're in. So,
yeah. Well, have a great day. Remember, we're proud of you.
Been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.